Today's episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code Locked On and you'll get $10 off your next order. You know, we're not even going to talk about that loss to the Wizards. We're going to look forward on this Friday Locked On Celtics to the Sixers series. And I got two guests with me that you'll recognize. Millie's. Let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance at all the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, 17 banners, way up in the rafters. J. King, John Corrales, and Sam Jam Packard. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global, but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Hey, welcome back here to the Locked On Celtics podcast, a special tripod. It's me, John Corrales, Boston Celtics beat writer for MassLive.com, joined by two jerks who work for The Athletic, who are sitting here showing me armpits. J. King, Jorm Packard. What's up, fellas? The gang's back together. We're here to preview the Sixers series. How you guys feeling? I know we just did like an hour long podcast, so I've already talked to you guys, but we're gonna.
That was looking back. Now we're looking to the future.
Can you guys hear the baby crying in my apartment building?
No.
There has been a fucking baby crying for at least an hour straight now. This must be the unhappiest fucking baby of all time. Would somebody get that thing a pacifier for fuck's sake?
J. King, future father of the year. Somebody get that thing a pacifier.
Well, if the baby's been crying for an hour, Jay is trying to come up with solutions. So that is indicative of maybe being a good father. He's not ignoring his child.
Do what my mom used to do is rub a little bit of ouzo on the gums.
Ooh.
Yeah. No wonder I drink. So if you haven't listened to the Anything is Potable podcast, we spent a significant amount of time along with Fred Katz. It's me and three guys from The Athletic talking about the season, the Celtics season that was, and whether it was a success. So go ahead and listen to Anything is Potable, a companion podcast to this that, as Jam said, was looking back today. At this point now, we're looking forward. The Boston Celtics are going to face the Philadelphia 76ers in the first round of the playoffs. This is something that we originally thought would have been a very terrible matchup, but now, how you feeling? A little bit better matchup, I would say, right?
Yeah, things have definitely changed for the Celtics, and not just because of the Ben Simmons injury, although I think that's a huge deal for Philly. He's been a problem for the Celtics this season. He is, like Joel Embiid, bigger and stronger than all of the Celtics players. And him being out is a big deal. And then the other side of it, defense, the Celtics have a ton of wings. Philadelphia no longer has the player who's been their best wing defender all season. So it's a massive, massive loss to lose Ben Simmons for the 76ers. And then on top of that, they've been kind of stinky all season.
Yeah.
And I think that's – they don't have enough shooting. They don't really fit. They have stopped playing defense in the bubble. I don't think that's a forever thing, but who knows? It could be. The 76ers are not the threat that everybody thought they were. They still do have Joel Embiid, though, which is probably the toughest single matchup for the Celtics in the Eastern Conference, short of Giannis.
Jam?
It's I don't know. I can't tell if my fears are irrational about, like, they do still have Joel Embiid. If the Sixers are going to win the series, they're basically going to need probably five games of extremely dominant Joel Embiid, best player on the court. I don't know if he has it in him, but there is some weird part of me that's like, maybe if they just, because they don't have Simmons on the court, it's just focused on putting some sort of shooters around Joel Embiid and, like, they figure something out. I mean, I still think the Celtics are going to win. I don't think it's like a big issue, but like one of the problems is like with the Sixers is that their just roster construction doesn't make sense. And maybe it makes a little bit more sense if you put in, I'm trying to think of who their backup point guard is, Raul Neto. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to come up with
that makes more sense. Just throw Neto. That'll plug up all the holes.
Furkan Korkmaz is probably going to hit like 5 threes a game.
Korkmaz.
Apologies about that. I mean, Joel Embiid is still very good, but do you have any faith in Joel Embiid? Like, we saw Joel Embiid against the Celtics in Boston have like hit one of the best games of his career where he's just absolutely dominant, got to the line of probably like 15 to 20 times, and there was no way that anyone besides the Sixers were going to win that game. I don't know if Joel Embiid can do that for four games or enough to win a series. So I don't know. It's the Celtics should win. I'm not scared.
Okay. And, you know, listening to the broadcast today, Brian Scalabrine, not scared. Like a lot of people are sitting there saying not scared of the Sixers. I'm not ready to say not scared of the Sixers. I think the Celtics should win. But I can see certain scenarios where it's going to be hard to win. Like this isn't, I think people say, oh, no Ben Simmons. Well, fine. They're going to roll through that. And the reasoning is sound. I get it. They've looked like crap and Simmons is their best wing defender. When you lose your best wing defender, an all NBA level wing defender on a team, you know, when you're playing a team that has their strength at the wings, that definitely hurts. But, and I don't know if Brad Stevens was reciting accurate numbers or not. I assume he has accurate numbers. But when he said after the game that Philly without Simmons has been the number one offense in the NBA, it's either true or close to true because all
Brad
of a sudden,
citing three game sample sizes is just fantastic.
But like, it's, I don't think it's just three games. I think there
three
were
or four games, whatever it is.
Simmons missed some time earlier in the year, didn't he?
Oh, he meant all year.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's how I'm taking it. If he's only citing the bubble, then that's a little different. But my point is that when the Celtics have played the Sixers and have played them effectively, especially in the playoffs, not only, of course, they had Al, but they would sag off of Ben Simmons and dare him to shoot, which he obviously refused to do. And that helps you defend Joel Embiid because you can throw more bodies at Embiid because they're already there in his vicinity. With you take Simmons out and you put Shake Milton in and Al Horford in, two guys that can reliably hit the three, now you can't sag off of anybody. And I think there is a legitimate fear of Joel Embiid having such success that guys will instinctively want to help. So whether it's Cantor or Tice or Robert Williams or whomever getting destroyed by Joel Embiid, this is like 2008, 9, 10 Orlando Magic when Perk had to guard Dwight Howard and it was like, just guard him straight up. And if he goes off, he goes off. But don't you dare leave these guys. They don't have a ton of shooting, but they'll get hot. Tobias Harris can get hot from three. Horford can get hot from three. Shake Milton can get hot from three. If you help off of those guys and try to double team Embiid, you have the potential to give up a lot of points, and you might have the potential for Philly to maybe they'll take a drop off defensively, but maybe they outscore you.
And I think to your point, like one of the games the Celtics lost against the Sixers this year, Mike Scott hit a bunch of threes. And something like that, if you are helping as much as you are on Joel Embiid, that can be an issue. The 76ers, what's interesting about them, even some of their good shooters don't shoot it a lot. Like Al Horford's always been sort of reluctant to shoot the three, even though he's really good, even though he fluctuates between good and really good at it. Tobias Harris, same thing. He's not a guy who's like a high volume shooter. Josh Richardson never has been. So I think that's part of their problem with scoring points is that even with Simmons out, they don't have a lot of like high volume guys who you really, really have to dig in on. But Joel Embiid's a problem. And Joel Embiid is a problem specifically for the Celtics. Daniel Tice just isn't big enough to handle him alone. The Celtics all season have needed to help rotate, double, all of that. They're going to need to be sharp in that. And or you risk a guy like Harris getting hot, a guy like Scott even getting hot. And if just four or five extra threes go in, then the Sixers become really, really tough. One matchup I'm interested in watching is Al Horford, because he's going to have to guard probably Jaylen Brown. And I think Jaylen Brown's increased confidence from the three-point arc is going to be a big deal in this series. Can Al guard him at the arc? How vicious will Brad Stevens be against Al Horford if Al cannot guard any of those guys on the arc? And how much can Philadelphia, already without Simmons, get away with playing Embiid and Horford together?
We're going to pause the conversation here and pick it back up in a minute. But first, remember when I was talking to you about Built Bar and how awesome Built Bar was and all of that stuff? Well, I've actually found a protein bar that's better than those Built Bars. It's Built Bar. They made it better. They took a protein bar that I loved already and they made it better. It's still covered in 100% chocolate. It's still easy to chew. It still tastes great, just like a candy bar, but they made it even better. They've got their 12 original flavors plus 6 new flavors like caramel brownie and carrot cake and apple almond crisp. These are still the healthy protein bars that I've loved and that you've loved, and they're great for the health conscious guy. You can lose or maintain your weight while indulging or feeling like you're indulging, because they're a low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber bar. They're great for a keto diet, and you're going to get all of the protein and the stuff that you want in your body and none of the stuff that you don't. That's the best part about this. Protein bars can be challenging when you're looking across those shelves at the store. You don't know what to get. Don't bother with the stuff on these store shelves. Go to builtbar.com and pick out your combination of flavors. They're all going to be delicious. You're going to feel like you're eating a candy bar, and you're going to get stuff that's great for you and great for the goals that you're trying to get with your workouts. And right now, they've reset the promo. So if you've used the code LOCKEDON before, you can use it again. And you can even get a free cooler with your purchase while the supplies last, okay? So you got to go now. If you want the free cooler, go to builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you're going to get $10 off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off and that free cooler with your purchase while supplies last at builtbar.com. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can even follow us on Spotify.
As much as there's concerns about, I guess, Philly's maybe increased three-point shooting and all the focus on Embiid, the other end of the court, I just don't see how the Sixers guard the Celtics. The Sixers don't have athletic enough wings to really keep up. Like, that is the Celtics' strength. Who do they say if they have their starting lineup out there? Like, they can put Tybull on Kemba, I guess, and then maybe Josh Richardson on Jaylen Brown, but then you're still going to have either Gordon Hayward or Jason Tatum. Like, Tobias Harris is a wing, I guess, but he's not like the most fleet of foot. Like, the Sixers are like, they relying on their size and kind of just being big, but you take Ben Simmons out of the equation, there's so much less ball pressure. I just think the Celtics could, like, if it's just a run and gun, like shooting three-pointers, like, I would imagine that favors the Celtics just because they have so many more guys who can shoot threes, and I think they can go small against the 76ers and play much faster. And I think there's just – I don't know how the Sixers are going to be able to slow the Celtics down.
That's the one thing, as you were talking, it popped into my head, that best five lineup, this could be a series where Brad unleashes that. And
you mean against when Embiid's not playing?
Even when Embiid's playing, maybe somewhere in the fourth quarter, what you would theoretically do is obviously Smart would get Embiid and you would hopefully, if you're ready to, if my strategy is you sacrifice whatever happens with Embiid, happens with Embiid. And I don't care if Embiid scores every time down the floor. Well, obviously not every time down the floor, but then it doesn't matter if Smart guards Embiid, because first of all, I think Embiid, I don't trust the conditioning of Embiid. And if Embiid's going to be the guy doing all of the work and having to work hard in the post and constantly be trying to score, I think eventually that's going to wear him down. So yeah, put him out there, run those guys up and down the floor, run Embiid up and down the floor, wear him out. So in the fourth quarter, all he's reduced to is taking threes and really being, I think you can render him ineffective. I think this is an opportunity for that best five lineup. And because mostly offensively, who, like you said, Jay, who does Al Horford guard? Who does Embiid guard in that scenario? I would make Embiid work. You defend Embiid by making him work on the defensive end and wearing him out. Because then Horford, if he's in the game, would have to guard who? Tatum? Brown? That leaves one of those two guys for Embiid to cover. And I don't think Philly can guard that lineup at all. I think they will get run ragged, and I think that would impact them on the offensive end.
If anything goes wrong for the Celtics, I think the first thing that pops out to me is that Joel Embiid, as good a defender as he is, takes away a lot of what they do at the rim. When the Celtics offense looks disjointed, it's because Tatum is having struggles at the rim. He's shooting shots that have no chance, or, you know, Kemba, he's not like a master at the rim either. He can get that taken away a little bit too. That's when they look their worst, is when they're like flipping up bullshit shots, like the Brook Lopez treatment, how Brook Lopez swatted six shots and they made a lot of bad decisions at the rim. I think the Celtics have to make good decisions at the rim against Embiid. They need to take advantage of their speed and have that be more of a factor than Philadelphia's size. And then at the other side, obviously you have Embiid, but also just the glass. Philadelphia in the bubble is number one in offensive rebounding. I think they're sixth or seventh for the entire season. And Boston has held up for the most part on the glass, but it's different in a playoff series, and it's different against a beast like Embiid, Horford, who's going to be taller than every Celtic on the floor. And then Harris, who's just as big as any Celtics player in the starting lineup too. So their size can't be more of an issue than Boston's speed is. I think winning that battle is big for the Celtics.
I think another thing that could go wrong with respect to the size is like what happens when Daniel Tice gets four fouls in the first half, and then you're forced to, you know what, then your backup center, you either have to go to that small lineup, which is basically just like, I guess, conceding the paint to the Sixers, or you're having to play a lot of Enes Kanter minutes or Rob Williams minutes. And I just have this image burned in my brain of in Philadelphia, Enes Kanter, just like they ran Josh Richardson pick and rolls at him for like eight consecutive possessions and made Josh Richardson basically look like Kemba Walker and his just ability to hit pull-up jump shots. Like, how long can they survive if Kanter's getting extended minutes? Or if it's not Kanter, do you have faith in Rob Williams to kind of be effective? Because Daniel Tice is going to get in foul trouble. Just that's the nature of Embiid. I mean, we saw when just trying to deal with Bam Adebayo, that how much foul trouble that landed the Celtics in with Marcus Smart fouling out. Like, will that be an impact, and will the Celtics have enough of a backup center to kind of deal with? Basically, it's like, I don't really trust Enes Kanter because he's such a liability on defense.
I think this could be a Kanter series. I do. I trust Kanter more against the 76ers than against anybody else. And I say that, one, because his bulk can be really useful against Embiid. For all his flaws, he's not a terrible post defender. Like, he hangs in there, he competes, he's strong. And then two, I don't think Philadelphia has enough playmaking in the pick and roll to take advantage of his flaws, or at least take fierce advantage of his flaws. I know you talked.
I just told you that Josh Richardson.
It was one stretch of one game. Josh Richardson.
And it won the game for the 76ers.
It was one game. I'm just saying, like, they don't have the Kyle Lowry. They don't have.
They have Raul Neto, bro.
this is what I'm saying.
Checkmate.
And they don't have that, like, super quick guard who's really skilled in the pick and roll, who's going to give Kanter fits. Obviously, anyone could give Kanter troubles. He's not the greatest lateral mover of all time. But I think this could be a Kanter series. I'm also interested to see how Robert Williams holds up against Embiid. And, like, I don't think post defense is, like, his forte at the moment. Obviously, he can jump and block shots and stuff, but we'll see with Robert Williams against Embiid.
You know, the Robert Williams thing is interesting. I think this could be a throw everything at Embiid type of thing. That if Daniel Theis gets into foul trouble, I think everybody's available. Go out there and just
Grant
beat
and
him
Benny
to hell.
Are two thick boys who got 12 fouls between them.
You know, get Grant Williams out there. Grant Williams, and now Grant Williams has not done anything. He's not shown much in this bubble that makes it seem like he will play. But throw him out there for a couple minutes. See if he's got it. See if he can hold his own. Put a forearm in Embiid's back. And look, again, one of my personal strategies here is banking on Embiid to get tired late in games, because I think that it's definitely a thing, and I just don't think that he's in the kind of shape to withstand a beating. So if you throw a fresh bodies at him, and even if they become fouls, just make him work. Make him work hard. Make him feel you. And at some point, you've just got to hope that Embiid going off, and look, if Embiid averages 50 for the series, I don't care, as long as you hold everyone else to less than 50 or right around there. I think the Celtics can put up 110, 120. They've shown that they're capable of doing that. I think they can win this series by scoring these points and letting Embiid kind of punch himself out and taking over down the stretch of games. So if Theis gets into foul trouble, then you go to Kanter. And if Kanter doesn't have it, if they're hitting him in the pick and rolls, then you try Robert Williams, and then if Embiid has to guard Robert Williams, fine. Then he has to come out there and guard Robert Williams. I'm going to stick to that strategy, though, and I still believe that making Embiid work on the defensive end and making him chase people around, I think that's part of the defense on Embiid. You really do everything you can to wear him down, because without Ben Simmons, there's no other option. There's no other star to take over. You can't just sit him down and say, okay, now we're going to do the Ben Simmons with four of our other guys. We're going to do that thing that works. One of those guys with four of their other players is something that works. It's just two different styles. They don't have that Simmons style out there where you can run and have Simmons be elite in transition like he is. So take Embiid out of the equation any way you can. I just think that they can wear him out.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
The Sixers, one of their biggest problems is that they just lose all of the Embiid minutes when he's on the bench. And I think that's going to become even bigger of an issue in the playoffs, because who is the Sixers' primary ball handler? Like, who is their go-to guy? Or, like, right, do you really judge, like, it's going to be Tobias Harris's big time to shine when Embiid's on the bench? I think they're going to really struggle. And we talk about Embiid, like, his rim protection. And I think it's the same way that the Celtics would have to approach a Milwaukee series. But if Embiid's going to drop every time and protect the rim, why aren't you just running Kemba pick and rolls and just, like, you're having Kemba just take pull-up jumpers from the foul line every single time? Like, if you draw Embiid out that much, then I think their rim protection is less, and I think there's definitely an available, like, option to do that. I was just thinking about it, like, Tybal is a very, like, great defender. He's going to be pretty good on Kemba, but he's basically an as effective a shooter as he's willing to shoot, because he's not a coward, but He's basically as good a shooter as Ben Simmons is. Like, you can help off him. I'm just trying to think of, like, what four guys. Obviously, it's Tobias Harris. Obviously, like, it's Al Horford. But who are the other two guys, presumably at the guard position? We'll go with my main man, Josh Richardson. I just can't think of, a sustainable lineup that can create enough playmaking or scoring for the Sixers for it to sustain an entire series.
Now, I agree with you. I don't know who you turn to, but you got to see. I question whether playoff Al Horford is going to come in and be more aggressive. We've seen him have kind of like.
Does down. He become the main point guard? Does Embiid goes to the bench and then it's like we're running our offense through dribble handoffs with Al Horford at the top of the key?
I mean, if they're smart, they kind of have to, right? I mean, that's been something that the Celtics have done effectively. So you would kind of have to. You're going to have to rely on Shake Milton. You're going to have to rely on other guys to kind of step up and play above their heads. But it's going to be difficult because I think the Celtics offense, we could see a fair amount of, like you said, of Kemba with those pull-up jumpers. I think Gordon Hayward is somebody that's going to be huge in this series because if he's getting those mid-range shots, and that mid-range shot's going to be very important in the playoffs, if he's able to kind of read that and pull Embiid further out, because at some point, hitting those mid-range shots is going to soften up the defense. Then you're going to start seeing those backdoor cuts. And if the Celtics start getting a couple of backdoor cuts, then Philly's got no answers for that because that Embiid's strength is standing there and swatting people. The Celtics, you brought up the Bucks thing. It's going to be very much like that Bucks series, that Bucks plan of attack. Attack the paint, get into Embiid, kick it out, have him rotate. As soon as you can get him rotated out, then boom, there are ways to get him either to A, rotate and be out of position, or B, not rotate, which leaves a guy open. So I think the Celtics offense is going to be, I think they're going to be able to generate most of the shots that they want.
So what's your bigger concern, offense for the Celtics or defense for the Celtics?
I'm not concerned about the offense at all. I'm concerned about their defense. I think the obvious concern is the defense on Embiid, which I think that they can handle, but there's just such a natural inclination to overreact when a guy is torching you that my biggest fear is that Embiid goes off and the Celtics make mistakes rotating defensively and someone gets hot and they start losing a game or two because, like you said, Furkan Korkmaz got four catch and shoot corner threes, and
he's going to do it. That's going to happen. Korkmaz is going to be annoying as hell. Right. He's going to be public enemy number one.
So, but that's how the Celtics lose. The Celtics lose by blowing rotations, overreacting to Embiid, letting somebody get hot, and getting torched by threes. And if they can stick to their defensive principles, I think they'll be okay. Offensively, I'm not worried one bit. They've got too many weapons. And without Ben Simmons, that's just such a huge drop off because Simmons can literally guard anybody on that team. And that allows them to do so much defensively. It raises the game of everybody. To lose him defensively is the biggest loss because not only does he allow them to get stops, but then he is an elite transition guard. And those two things, being able to get the stops, turn those live ball turnovers into transition points, that is such a huge part of Philly's formula to win that once that's gone, that I'm not worried about the Celtics scoring points. So guard Embiid. Figure out how to guard Embiid.
It's actually kind of paradoxical because you think that Embiid is the Celtics' worst matchup and a team with this the size of the Sixers would be bad matchup. But I think actually, it kind of plays into the Celtics' style of being an extremely quick team, and they can counteract that by playing fast and being switchable and doing all those things. I think what we saw, at least my takeaway from the Miami game, was that it's a team that plays equally as small and has a big Bam that can do a bunch of things actually hurts the Celtics because it kind of like reduces them to like they get no advantage from their ability to play small. And so I think actually the contrast there, it benefits the Celtics on offense. The biggest concern being that like Embiid goes off and that like the 3-point shooters are knocked down. But I agree with you, John, that if you like, you just talk about getting Embiid tired, it takes a lot of energy to score 40 points a game. And so, and that's just on the offensive end. I think they like, it's really about being disciplined and just letting Joel Embiid do that, because Embiid has the tendency to bail out. Anytime he takes a three, that's a win for the Celtics. Anytime he takes any shot that's not in the paint, that's a win for the Celtics. And he tends to get like kind of tired and lazy and just does that. And I think if they just like kind of let Embiid do that, they'll generally tire him out and their kind of depth will win out in the end.
So let's finish this up by saying predictions. Jay, what do you think?
Celtics in five.
Five. Jam.
That's what I was going to say. Celtics in five.
Okay. Well, I'll say.
No! Celtics sweep, baby!
I knew it was coming. I'll go the other way and say Celtics in six to allow for the Furkan Korkmaz annoyingly hot game and the inevitable game of Embiid getting lazy and tired but still hitting like three threes down the stretch and having that be something that happens. So
there could be also like a Tobias Harris 35-point game.
Sure.
Like I'm just trying to think of all that kind of
player, so I mean
possibilities of like things that could happen. Also, Al Horford revenge game could happen. What are the chances Al Horford? Oh, my. The tweet that Anna Horford is going to be tweeting off while this series is going on is just absolutely mind-blowing.
Oh,
but
my God.
The Al Horford revenge game, I think, one, just because it would be to spite Philly fans who have been so mean to him for this entire season. But I think there is potential for him. There's just one of those guys. I agree with you. It could possibly go six because you never know in the playoffs. There's always one guy who like gets hot and like can swing a game. I think Tobias Harris could do it. I definitely think Al Horford could do it. And I fucking know that Korkmaz is doing it.
No doubt. There's no doubt that Furkan Korkmaz is going to torch us at one point.
The 76ers remind me so much of last year's Celtics team.
Yeah.
They're just a talented group that just hasn't fit. They had that 4-month NBA hiatus, still couldn't get the pieces to fit. Then they lost Simmons.
They know changes are coming. They know like Brett Brown's on the hot seat. As soon as their adversity, I could see them folding.
Yeah. I think one element of this is the lack of home court. And Philly is so good at home that not having that takes away one of those kind of like, even if the Celtics were to win the first two in Boston, you know, game three would be a Philly win. And you know that there's a risk of a game four, even if they stole one, whatever, like, you know, that there was going to be a Philly just home playoff craziness win in that. And Embiid especially feeds off that crowd so much. With no crowd to feed off of, you do wonder if some of these runs that Philly might make in general or might be capable of making, if the Celtics respond, that they just don't have that counter, you know, that second counterpunch. I think that's definitely a fear for the Sixers and Sixers fans, that without that home juice, that they might not have it. And it almost like Kyrie last year, what I was saying in the other podcast, where, you know, he started switching on to Giannis. Like, if the shit hits the fan, do the Sixers just pack it in? Does Embiid just pack it in and say, you know what? Let's get Brett Brown fired. Let's I'm done. I'm done with this. You know, get me one step closer to signing for Miami so I can go hang out with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I think there's a chance too. The Sixers look at it like Al Horford could get traded. They may want to break up at least part of that roster. Brett Brown could get fired. There's a lot going on in that locker room. I don't think after Simmons went down, they really think they can make a title run. Before that, they probably held out hope. Now they might just want to be like, let's get the fuck out of the bubble. Let's just go home. And I am interested to see the psychological impact of the bubble on playoff series, because there's no more home court advantage. There's no more like having the comfort of, okay, even if we lose the first two games, we're going home. If you lose the first two games now, that is could be a death sentence, you know? Yeah. Like what? And then if it is a death sentence, do teams just say, you know what, screw it, let's just get the hell out of Orlando. This is a hellscape. Let's get the fuck home. I think I'm interested to see how all of that sways playoff series.
Yeah.
And how, the rhythm of a playoff series will be entirely different.
Totally
back different. Of home court.
Totally. And how many deposits in the Bank of Trust have the 76ers? Because they were shoddy for the entire pre-pandemic. And it's not like they are like the Suns right now and like have really gone on a run and have like come together since coming to the bubble. There's just nothing to rely on for them to like be like, we got this. Whereas it feels like the Celtics were playing great basketball before the pandemic and are like really on a rhythm right now and seem to be hitting their stride as they enter the playoffs. It feels like that's just all signs point to the Celtics being like just the more reliable team, at least in the first round.
Yeah. I mean, I agree.
But I will say it would be the worst thing that could ever happen to this Celtics team. To lose to Philly without Ben Simmons would be the worst way to end a very positive season.
Awesome. Well, on that note, Jay, I'm going to wrap it up on a high note, but thanks for putting that thought in our heads. You're right, though. It would be the worst thing that could happen.
The worst.
It would be the worst. It would be the worst case scenario would put the ultimate horrible taste on what has been a great season for the Celtics. So, all right. But we all think they're going to win. We all think they're going to win fairly easily. So we'll see how that goes. We spent 45 minutes talking about how this past season went, and that was on the Anything is Potable podcast. So home and home series, Anything is Potable and Locked On Celtics. Appreciate you guys doing the home and home, coming back home, I should say, on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Fuck, we forgot to shout out your book on our podcast.
We did forget to shout out.
That was the whole reason we brought you on the podcast. We wanted to shout out your book.
I'm going to have to come back on the
podcast. No one told me that was the reason John was on the podcast. I thought we were just hanging out.
No, yeah, Jay, I'm the host
of that podcast. You have to tell me these things if you need to get a shout out in.
I wanted to promote his book.
I'm gonna have to come back now to promote my book.
Oh no, we will just cut out this portion of the audio stick it on the end of the podcast.
This is on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
But we're sticking it on the end of our
my podcast too. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that sounds like a lot of work for me to kind of edit those two things.
Yeah, see, Jan doesn't want to do that work. It's so much easier for me to come back on an off day and promote my book.
What book is that? When does it come out? Where can you buy it?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Sam Packard. Pause for edit. It's the Boston Celtics all-time all-stars, the best players at each position for the C's. It is, I pick a 12-man roster, two players at each position. So I have a debate at point guard, all five positions. I name one player a starter, the other player is the backup. I've got two wild cards to make out the 12-man roster. And I get the same thing for the coaches. So I have a head coach and an assistant coach. And then I have a section where I put guys that I wish I could vote for that aren't really all-stars, but I felt like I should mention a few of them because I would love to have them on that team.
If so. Marcus Smart's not a wild card, I might have to burn that book. No spoilers, though. Don't tell me.
No spoilers. But it's available everywhere books are sold for pre-order. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, independent booksellers. Just search for Boston Celtics All-Time All-Stars or search for my name, and it will come up. So everybody buy my book. Pre-order the book. It drops in December. And, yeah.
It's fucking awesome you wrote a book.
It is. It's extraordinarily great. I hated the entire process of it. It was a lot of work. But the fact that I did it is, I'm glad that I can say that I wrote a book. I mean, that's wild. You're but
published author John Corrales. You right. can say that for the rest of your life.
I can say that. I can hold up a book and be like, I wrote this thing.
You were number one best-selling author, John Corrales.
For like a week. What
you put on Twitter.
So I was the number one new basketball book on Amazon for like 4 days. And then someone else dropped the basketball book.
Four more days than me and Jay.
I got it. I got that screenshot. Like I joked on Twitter, I'm like the Jordan Crawford of authors, where I've got like my player of the week, and I got my screenshot where it says number one new book, and that's it. I'm happy and whatever. But I hope people buy it, and I hope it ends up, you know, doing okay. And it, like I said, it's going to come out in December, so hopefully right around the beginning of next season. You have to buy it because that's, hey, if you buy that book, that's 12 cents in my pocket, baby.
Ooh,
which is how much money I get.
12 cents for every copy?
12 cents per book. Yeah. So buy 10 copies, please.
Can I just Venmo you 12 cents and you can give me the book?
Yeah. I'll give you a free book if you Venmo me 12 cents.
Sounds like a deal. I don't want to give money to those goddamn corporations.
Right, right. Give me a case of free books. I'll dole them out for 12 cents a piece. All right, guys. Thanks for that. Everybody buy my book. Subscribe to me. Subscribe to Locked On Celtics. Subscribe to anything that's potable. Go ahead. Give these two jerks a follow. It's a good podcast. I listen to it, even though I know Jay doesn't listen to this one. But go ahead and subscribe to them. Not a podcast guy, of course. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast. You're on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Fire up! The Locked On Podcast Network.